I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 166 for the weekend starting 3 February 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, which will be the first trillion-dollar tech company?
Also this week, does government want to create a new telecoms monopoly? And ICASA to review mobile termination rates.
Houston, we have liftoff.
Well, that was dramatic. How's that intro?
Yeah, okay, we're ready for it now.
Feels like we're on the set of a movie here.
Or with these microphones in front of us, definitely.
Well, indeed. That's our new intro music. We hope you like it. We've got a shortened version of that, which we'll be using from next week. But we thought we'd play the full intro for this first time we use it in this podcast, but a shortened version of it from next week on. Hope you like it. Before we get into this week's news, let's do our quiz. Richard, do you want to kick off with the first question?
Sure. First question. Government is seeking an extension to its welfare payments contract with NetOne UEPS Technologies, as it is hopelessly unprepared to take over the payments itself. How many people depend on these welfare payments each month? And we are looking for the nearest million.
Sure. Quite a question.
That is a great question.
Second question. MTN has increased its economic interest in which towers management group to 29%?
The third question, what is the name of the fintech startup club in Sandton created by Rand Merchant Investments? And here's a clue, we interviewed the club heads Dominic Collett in Tech Central podcast this week.
Fourth question, which opposition party MP said recently that South Africa's digital terrestrial television migration project has failed?
And the last question, how many iPhones did Apple sell in its most recent fiscal quarter for the 3 months ended 31 December 2016? And we'll accept the nearest 5 million.
It's a lot of iPhones. And we're going to talk about Apple in the show because, of course, they put out their fiscal quarter results. I think, was it the third quarter or the fourth quarter? I forget. I think the third quarter of their fiscal year, but the final quarter of 2016 on the calendar year. And we're going to talk about Microsoft and Facebook and Amazon and Google. And ask the question, which of these companies is going to be the first to a $1 trillion market cap? And I think it's a fascinating question to ask because all these companies are doing quite well at the moment.
Yeah, it's a good time to be in tech.
But before we get into the news and talk about multi-trillion-dollar tech companies, just a reminder that we have split our podcasting here at Tech Central into two streams now. We've got this show. If you're a fan of this show and you're already subscribed to it through an RSS feed or through your favorite podcatcher or podcast player, you don't really need to do anything. Just carry on listening to us now in, as Richard puts it, silky smooth buttons.
Silky smooth buttery voices.
With our new audio equipment. But we've also launched some interviews, podcast interviews for Tech Central, currently under the name The Tech Central Podcast. That name may change, as I mentioned in our last Talk Central podcast, but for now it's called the Tech Central podcast, and we're doing some great interviews on there. If you haven't been listening to them, I highly recommend catching up either through the website where we've posted the entries or via your favorite podcast reader, whichever one you happen to be using to listen to the show, for example. So we did an interview with broadcasting industry players a couple of weeks ago now, looking at the future of digital radio in South Africa.
What a great conversation that was.
It was a great conversation. If you're at all interested in that field, even if you're just a consumer of radio, it's worth a listen just to understand where the broadcasting industry may be going in the next few years. And then this week we had fascinating interviews, one with Dominique Collett at Rand Merchant Investments, who of course is hitting up the Alpha Code Club, a startup club for fintech startups. And we also spoke to, I've forgotten his name now, Dobek Pata, who is MD of Africa Analysis. And we had a great hour-long conversation about the ICT policy white paper. I know it's quite a dry subject, but it's an important subject, especially since it's going to impact not only the industry, but consumers more broadly if it passes in its current form. And Dobek warning, and we'll get to this later in the show, that the white paper in effect is going to create an infrastructure monopoly in South Africa, particularly in the mobile industry. And haven't we been there before in this country?
Not good.
Anyway, we'll talk about that in some more detail a bit later in the show. But before we get there, I want to talk about results. And there's some interesting numbers coming out of these big American-listed companies. There are five of them, really, that sit in this...
The big five.
...sit in this club of $300 billion-plus market cap companies. One of them's Apple, which put out very good numbers this week, particularly in terms of iPhone sales. They beat market expectations, analyst expectations, and that pushed the share price up to near record highs this week. Their market value is now sitting at $675 billion.
Yeah.
Most valuable company in the world at the moment. And Facebook also announcing numbers in recent days, along with Google and Microsoft, or Google parent Alphabet. And they're all good. Google's numbers, I think, were the only ones that may have missed analyst forecasts just slightly, but their numbers in the cloud were quite promising. Their cloud revenues, that side of their business has performed strongly. And that's also where Microsoft has done very well in their share price, hitting close, if not all-time record highs, very close to all-time record highs in the last few days. And Microsoft's market cap jumping above $500 billion. And I think the last time it was there was at the peak of the dot-com bubble back in 2000. So it's been a long time for Microsoft to claw its way back to where it was back in 2000, that those what were obviously overpriced values, overvalued levels during the peak of the dot-com frenzy. I don't know if you remember those days, Rashad. It was unbelievable, where companies like
Landgrab,
Aruba, which was a startup doing business-to-business e-commerce, was valued at $40 billion.
Yeah.
And it had barely any revenue at all, and certainly no profit, and it was worth $40 billion. There were companies, remember Pets.com, which used to advertise during
amazing.
The Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time coming for some of these companies to claw their way back to these sort of valuations. Of course, some of these companies didn't even exist at the time of the dot-com bubble. Facebook wasn't even around then, which is remarkable.
Children of the dot-com burst. I think they learned the lessons and... But yeah, interesting. Facebook's now sitting at 1.9 billion people.
1.9 billion monthly active users. Isn't that just astonishing?
It's ridiculous.
Absolutely astonishing. And I think the daily active user number is sitting about 1.3, if I remember.
1.2 billion people.
1.2, yeah, per day. That's a pretty serious platform.
No, it is. And I mean, the other stat, they have got more than 65 million businesses on the platform. And we've been using it quite successfully for a number of companies that we work with. It's the best platform to reach an audience if you want to talk to them. Obviously, your content still needs to be good and your message. I mean, you know, you don't want to be pushing junk out there. But it's such a great platform. And I can see why their numbers are so good.
Yeah, especially if you're going for that consumer retail audience. It works well. I'm not so sure it's a great business-to-business platform. But
no,
certainly,
not business-to-business, no, definitely.
But certainly when you're wanting to reach that retail consumer market, it's almost unmatched.
Great for awareness and the tools that they've built, it's fascinating.
Yeah. So Facebook's market cap, and I'm looking at all the numbers here in Google Finance, Facebook's market cap is sitting at, this is before markets open in the States, sitting at $392 billion. And remember, this is a company that was founded, 10 years ago? Mm. They're not that far behind Microsoft at $483 billion currently. They've come off a bit since the results were announced. A couple of more good quarters from Facebook and they could be bigger than Microsoft.
Sure. No, I can totally see that happening. I mean, the amount of stuff they're building around their businesses isn't just a social media for looking at family photographs anymore, that's for sure.
No, they're doing so much. And interesting, the other figure was 600 million, over 600 million users now on Instagram.
Sure.
Active users on Instagram. And they're branching out into all sorts of new areas. And I see Mark Zuckerberg announcing during the results presentations that their next big focus is video. Taking on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure I like the way that Facebook has implemented video at the moment. It kind of forces you to stay inside the Facebook ecosystem, even when that video is from YouTube.
They're certainly giving priority to their own videos. So for anybody uploading video, it's much better to embed a video in Facebook than it is to post a link from YouTube.
Yes.
You won't get the same preference.
Yeah.
I do think they've got a lot of improvement to do there, but they've got the technology. I mean, they've got the developers to implement the best version of what video could be on this platform.
Mm.
It'll be nice to see. I mean, but it won't really put much of a dent on YouTube. I think YouTube is, it's got a very specific audience for it. You know, it's a serious video video platform. Where, you know, Facebook with additional video could be fun, but it's going to take a while before it becomes a serious player.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It's going to be an interesting fight. I've no doubt that. I mean, there's no way, no doubt that there's a two-way war going on between Facebook and Google at the moment over advertising online.
Oh, yeah.
They, I mean, they really are sucking up the industry's profits and revenues. They have become the two major behemoths in the online advertising market.
Oh yes. And there's some really good YouTube ads out there. I mean, I've seen a few recently, and the quality is phenomenal. You know, it's just giving small businesses this platform. It's fantastic.
Anyway, but there's a third player which may be soon be entering in this, entering into this online advertising market, and that's Amazon. Jeff Bezos making some comments just in the last few days that Amazon is setting its sights on the market, and it's a $200 billion market according to Bloomberg. And as we've seen with their Amazon Prime Video product, when they come into a market, they don't mess around. And I think that if they become serious in that space, then we'll have a three-way fight between these three giants. Unfortunately, what's the phrase about elephants dancing? It's the little guy who gets hurt.
But they certainly have enough divisions to make enough of a dent in other in you know, offline industry, so to speak, as well. You know, the retailing side in South Africa still.
Yeah, Amazon's an amazing company. I was chatting with a friend of mine about this, and he's adamant, and I think I agree with him that Amazon currently sitting on a $400 billion market cap. Markets have just opened in the States. Apple is sitting on $720 billion. I would put some money on Amazon actually being the first there to the $1 trillion mark.
You reckon? So they're going to leapfrog.
Yeah, I think Apple is Apple's all about the iPhone now. It's a bit like you buy Nuspass. You're buying Nuspass for the 10 cent investment.
Yes.
When you buy Apple, you're buying it for iPhone sales. The rest is pretty much discounted.
Amazon is much broader. I think they've got a lot of opportunity.
Amazon is very broad. They want to build this new leg in advertising. It's early days yet, so we can't really count that. But their retail operation is massive, absolutely massive. Their reach of that thing is incredible, even though they aren't in most of the markets around the world yet with a direct presence.
It's a logistics arm. I think they've done that. You've seen the photographs of the factories and how precise they are and how they've optimized packing.
Their distribution centers are incredible. Yeah. Incredible. But of course, they've built another massive business in Amazon Web Services, AWS.
Oh, yes.
And you know, that's a massive business as well, and they really are taking on Microsoft. I would say that Microsoft and Amazon are the two leaders now in cloud services.
Yeah. I would put my money on Amazon any day of the week. I think if it comes to using their service, which I don't, I think the front end still needs a bit of work. A lot of developers use it because you can tap straight into the service you need to, and they obviously have one of the best infrastructures around.
Yes,
but for the consumer, I still think they have some work to do before the cloud services and become a bit more mainstream, like the Dropbox of the world Office 365 and that kind of thing.
You're right. I mean, if you just look at the numbers, you think Apple will be the first there, right? $720 billion.
No, it's so close, but you're right. It's betting everything on one product versus
one
multiple
bad,
industries.
One bad quarter for the iPhone, and it's that share price is tickets. And you know, they obviously benefited from Samsung's troubles last year, and they had a good Christmas quarter. But you know, if that Samsung Galaxy S8, which is coming out soon, is really good, it could have an impact on iPhone sales. It's not to say Apple is in any danger of going away anytime soon. I mean, they're a huge, massively profitable, very successful company. Yeah. But you know, it's built on the iPhone. It's over 70% of their sales now. Mac is a tiny portion of their business, whereas once it was the bulk of their business.
And that's despite all the Mac users asking for more Mac.
Yes.
More MacBook, better MacBook without all the fancy touch bars. I wonder, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, I would have, 5 years ago, I would have never thought that they would pin so much on a mobile device like the iPhone.
Yeah. I don't think it was their intention. It's just been so successful.
It's been so successful, yeah.
And now it's all about iPhone, and that's where their focus has been, which may be fair enough. It was interesting to see the most interesting figure I actually thought that came out of the Apple results was the iPad sales down 22% year on year.
I mean, who still uses an iPad really? If you've got an iPhone, large screen device, you generally use that. We only use it for watching
Netflix. Movies. I use mine quite a bit, mainly to use it to read Pocket.
It's a nice, e-reader for you, a digital reader.
It's a digital reader, yeah. But you only I read magazines on it. I read magazines on it.
But you don't use any of the advanced functionality on it.
No, no, no. And, you know, I see no need to. I've got an iPad Air 2, which I upgraded from the original iPad 2. That was a big step up. I mean, the original iPad 2 had become so slow, and I don't play games on my iPad, but it was painfully slow, and I eventually decided to upgrade because of the Retina display, which does make a big difference. But I see no reason to get the very expensive iPad Pro.
No, I don't. We're not in those industries that require that kind of...
And the iPad Air 2 is a fantastic device, and I'll probably continue to use it for many, many years to come before I even think about upgrading it.
No, I agree. I
am one of those users, though, who sees the need for tablets. I will upgrade it at some point. It's not that I regret purchasing the iPad. I think it's a fantastic device, and I get a lot of use out of it. For example, I was meant to go for a run last night, but I couldn't run because I'd hurt myself. And so my wife went for a run, and I sat there for an hour waiting for her, reading my iPad. And I had a much better experience doing that than I would have had sitting with my phone, I think.
Oh, yes. No, I agree. Mm. The larger screen, there's definitely a place for it if you want that kind of experience. You know, like I said, we use it for a lot of content consumption. Also great to have if you go on the road tripping over December holiday like we did, you have it there in the car. It's a device that can do virtually anything without having to open a big notebook in a confined space.
Works well as a GPS in the car as well.
Oh, yeah. Massive GPS.
Pop it on your dashboard, and of course the iPad, I think you mentioned going on holiday. If you've got kids, then the iPad is fantastic. You just kids screaming in the back seat, throw the iPad back, play some games.
It's a surprisingly good media player, especially for streaming video. No,
yeah, it is.
It.
Yeah,
and the apps run really well on it, so there's no issues there.
Yeah. Anyway, we should probably move on to our next subject. I don't know if we want to put a friendly bet on which company is going to get to $1 trillion first. My money's on Amazon. Which one would you pick, Rafa?
Look, I might play the safe bet and say I'm sure Apple could get there.
Mm. It's between the two of them, isn't it?
I think it's between those two, But, I mean, that's the underdog, the up-and-comer is definitely Amazon.
Mm. For sure.
I'm going to put a six-pack of beer on that. Let's see.
You're on.
Okay, done. Marked.
Cool. All right, we're going to take a quick ad break. We'll be back right after this.
Hello world. Hello information. Hello uploads and downloads. Hello streaming videos and low latency. Hello blogs and vlogs. Hello crystal clear video calls. Hello increased productivity. Hello online learning. Hello cloud. Hello long lost friends and missed connections. Hello limitless possibilities and instant gratification. Say hello to premium high speed fiber from Vox Telecom. Pleasure guaranteed. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Chicken or beef? Chicken or beef? Chicken.
There's so many companies offering fiber at the moment, but with Vox Telecom's premium high-speed fiber, you'll be joining the Smile High Club.
Duck or salmon, sir?
We call it business class fiber. We guarantee our uptime and can tailor our services to suit your needs and budget. Say hello to business class fiber from Vox Telecom. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, Rechat?
How's it, Duncan?
So, I had an interesting chat with the head of Africa Analysis, Dobek Pata. He's probably one of the best ICT analysts in this country. We sat down to have a chat. It actually started because I went to a presentation at the Free Market Foundation last week. Hmm. The Free Market Foundation has been taking a lot of interest in the ICT policy white paper. They're worried that this white paper involves far too much government interference, takes the industry backwards, and effectively leads to the creation of a new monopoly. And Dobek gave a very good presentation there, and I decided to go and have a chat with him at Africa Analysis offices in Pretoria, in Centurion, actually. And we had a good chat, and the podcast is on the site, well worth a listen. I think a lot of people hear white paper, they hear legislation, and they switch off. But it's very important. This ICT policy white paper is quite radical. I think some people might even call it populist. In that it wants to take South Africa back, according to Jobbik Patta, and I agree with him, back to an era where there was a monopoly over infrastructure in South Africa. Now, the White Paper's aims, I think, are good, but I think the and that's a point that Jobbik makes quite forcefully in the podcast. The way the White Paper envisages doing it is not good, because it will break the industry. What the White Paper, and I apologize to anyone who's already completely au fait with what this White Paper says, but I think it bears repeating anyway. It states that all future high-demand spectrum, in other words, spectrum that can be used to build 4G LTE networks, will not be allocated in the way it's always been allocated, in other words, on an exclusive use basis to companies like Vodacom, MTN, Telkom, and Cell C. Instead, all of that spectrum will be reserved for a wholesale open access network, a single network, in which the operators are expected to contribute equity. In effect, we're going to have an infrastructure monopoly over mobile in South Africa. And it's difficult to see how, if this goes ahead, how the big operators are going to be able to say no to it, because spectrum is their lifeblood. Without it, they can't actually continue to grow. MTN and Vodacom in particular have been very forceful in their criticism of the White Paper. One of the disturbing aspects of the White Paper as well is that it says that existing spectrum allocations may be taken back from the mobile operators.
That's not good.
So the networks, the infrastructure, or the spectrum that they've used to build their 2G, 3G, and 4G networks could actually be taken away from them when those licenses expire and handed to this wholesale open access network.
That's breaking the system, really.
It is, exactly. I understand from my sources in government that that clause is going to be taken out of the final policy document, whatever shape that policy document eventually takes, and so it won't make it into legislation. But the fact is, it's sitting there, and it's a very populist thing. I think the mining industry in South Africa first faced a similar problem a couple of years ago, where they were talking about, where there was a lot of talk about government and mining rights. I'm not the expert on that, but people I've spoken to said that the government effectively was going to break the mining industry and destroy investment over the mining rights issue. And I think what we're facing here is something similar.
Too big to let go.
Fascinating discussion with Jobbik. One thing I've picked up is that there seems to be a serious antagonism amongst some people in government towards MTN and Vodacom in particular. There's a feeling that these companies are big and bad and evil, and that they've been ripping people off for years, and something needs to be done about this to punish them. That's certainly the impression I'm getting from talking to people and reading between the lines in the White Paper, and sometimes not even between the lines. Sometimes it's stated quite clearly that something has to be done about this duopoly. And certainly some of the criticism that's directed towards those two big companies is warranted. They've behaved like companies behave in a market where they have come to dominate, because they've been protected from competition by the selfsame government, which was very slow to roll out or license new competitors. They've taken advantage, of course they have, and we saw prices stay high for a very long time, and it took a long time for mobile data prices to come down, and it could be argued, I think probably you'd be quite justified in arguing that data prices are still too high.
Yeah.
That's not only the function of a lack of competition, though, which the government seems to think, it's also a function of the fact that the government's been slow to allocate spectrum to these companies, which they could then use to roll out their networks. So I think it's very easy and the populist thing to do, to point fingers at these big companies and blame them. And I think it's easy for the government to do that. They say, well, these guys have been ripping you off. Look, they're the bad ones. We're trying to come in here with this white paper, which is going to fix it.
Yeah.
But I think that many of the problems that we see in this industry are actually a direct result of government interference, or the lack of government interference in some respects, in that it's taken years and it still hasn't happened, for spectrum to be allocated, for example. The operators have been saying they've been saying for years they need access to the spectrum. We're now seeing companies like MTN densifying their networks. You drive around Johannesburg now and you see these street lamps disguised as mobile towers. Now, I don't think the operators want to be deploying those solutions as aggressively as they are, because it's very expensive to densify your network in that way. But they're doing it because they're running out of spectrum. They're having to invest more in infrastructure on the ground. They're having to put in more base stations because they don't have the spectrum to cater for the demand. And as a result of that, prices are going to go up because consumers are going to have to pay more for this infrastructure because the operators don't have the spectrum. But it's a fascinating discussion I had with Dobek. I'd highly encourage you to go and have a listen to it. And it goes into a lot of detail. Also on the subject of network neutrality, Dobek's views there are that we are going for a very hardline approach to network neutrality. Now, on the surface of it, net neutrality sounds like a great idea. The regulators or the policymakers come in and they prevent operators from putting up toll gates, if you like, or prioritizing different types of traffic flowing across their network. But once you actually start to interrogate it, the harder the network neutrality becomes, the harder the network, the harder the policy is towards network neutrality, the more they insist on that network neutrality principles are always followed, the less companies are likely to invest in infrastructure rollout. There's a direct correlation between the two, as Dobek points out in my interview with him. If you tell Vodacom, for example, that they can't provide this service at a improved quality level to Company A because Company A is prepared to pay for that improved quality or that prioritization of bandwidth, then, hey, what's the incentive in it for Vodacom to roll out that particular connection to Company A at offering these service level agreements and the certain quality to that customer if it has to provide the same level of service to everyone else in the market at a much lower cost? And the impact at the end of the day is that the price goes up for everyone, is Dobek's view, or the service doesn't get provided.
Yeah, it's the trickiest place, and it's one area we shouldn't be faltering because this is what innovation is about. If it's the backbone of innovation or technology is communications and the data networks.
And I think regulators and policymakers, politicians know that people don't interrogate these issues in any sort of detail. And when they hear, a regulation, net neutrality, to force companies not to to slow down my Netflix, for example, they think, wow, that's fantastic. That must be implemented. It's got, big bad companies doing bad things. We just have these regulations to stop them from doing those bad things. But as Dobek points out in my interview with him, you have to be very careful because you introduce a regulation, it can have an unintended consequence. And ultimately, and I agree with him, ultimately it should actually be up to the markets to decide. If you don't like the service you're getting from operator A, then you should be able to go to operator B. And the fact that you can switch and go to operator B, in fact might do so, is an incentive enough for operator A to improve its service and to deliver to you what you want, rather than a regulator or a policymaker coming along and saying, sorry, operator A, you have to deliver this to this customer.
I think a company like Afrios did very well with it, and it's a good analogy to pull because they came into a market, offered all these options that nobody else could do. And look at what they've done now.
They've been very successful, And in a in a properly functioning and competitive market, you shouldn't need regulations like that. I think what the government should be doing is focusing on ensuring that the market is properly competitive, not on trying to put up roadblocks and regulations all along the way to impede people from trying to provide services to end users. Anyway, that's my thoughts on it. And I know lots of people will disagree with me, particularly on the subject of net neutrality, which is quite contentious. It's going to be quite interesting to watch what happens in the US because, of course, the Obama administration has been pushing net neutrality quite hard, and Donald Trump has become US president. The Republicans are running the show, and they're quite opposed to net neutrality because I think they see that that regulatory interference can distort the market, or maybe they're just ideologically not inclined to regulate this sort of thing. But I do think that if there is going to be net neutrality, it has to be very carefully thought out before it's imposed. And in the white paper, the ICT policy white paper, it's quite tough. And, as Dobek points out, could have the opposite impact to what government's hoping it will have.
Can't mess around with this, guys, please.
So MTRs, that's been quite a quiet subject for the last couple of years. I remember we were talking about it almost nonstop at one point. Mobile termination rates, or termination rates in general, just a fancy term for the fees that operators charge each other to carry calls between their networks. ICASA is saying this week that they're going to start the process of reviewing those mobile termination rates. The current MTR regime comes to an end in October of this year, so They have to come up with the new regulations. The question is, do we really care anymore about voice termination rates? I mean, everyone talks about data these days. Isn't this a bit of a moot point? Shouldn't we just push these interconnection rates down to zero and be done with it?
Yeah, look, yes, but I think most people, let's be honest, a lot of people still use voice. It's still such a big part of the market.
Yeah.
It needs to come down, definitely. It needs to be looked at because, you know, this is just another thing that's unnecessarily high. The charges are unnecessarily high.
Mm.
There's no reason why customers need to be paying so much for calls.
They have come down, though. I mean, the last MTR review had a big impact on retail prices, although you'll talk to the operators and they'll flatly deny it, especially the big operators. But ICASA introduced asymmetry into the market, which in effect meant that smaller players, Telkom and Cell C in the mobile space, paid less to Vodacom and MTN than Vodacom and MTN paid to Cell C and Telkom to terminate calls. And Cell C argued that was absolutely necessary. They felt the asymmetry was not sufficient in the final regulations and actually threatened to they did take it to court, in fact, but then withdrew their court case. I think when they realized that by the time the court had ruled on it, the next set of regulations would have been created. We're coming back up to that again, and I'm sure the same old arguments are going to be put forward in the public hearings about why there should or should not be asymmetry, why asymmetry should be kept where it is or increased or reduced. But I think the fact is that it's becoming less relevant as we move to a data world.
Of course,
the bulk of the revenue for the operator still comes from voice.
Yeah, and that's why they're clinging on to that, hanging on to that, because it's the last way to, I think, really make big bucks in the sector. I mean, with data being scrutinized like it is, that's not going to be the future of the revenue.
Mm. I do think that at the public hearings, we're going to hear a lot of inputs from industry players saying, well, you know, why are we looking at voice on separately instead of looking at data as well? But there are no termination rates for data between networks. If you place a call over a voice over IP network, say WhatsApp, if we put a place a WhatsApp call to one another right now, then both of us are going to be paying for the use of that data. It's not a one-way bill. It goes both ways.
Well, I guess if the networks become adapt and use more data for their voice, you know, then it also negates the need for those integrated rates.
Yes.
But again, it's a way to make money, and you can't deny that.
No, indeed. It's going to be another bun fight, no doubt, and let's just hope it doesn't end up in court like it did last time. Well, that takes care of the news for this week, Rechot. I think we just need to get to our regular features this week. And let's start with our loser this week, because it's an interesting one. We've picked Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, which seemed like an odd pick on a week where they put out results, beat analyst expectations, and their share price surged. But we've picked him because he's just lost, or Facebook has just lost this big lawsuit over the Oculus Rift virtual headset.
Yes.
And
Battle of the headsets.
They've been ordered to pay $500 million over allegations that the technology built into the Oculus Rift was stolen. That the code behind it, a lot of the code behind it, was stolen. And the court has found in favor of what's the company called? ZeniMax, I think.
Mm.
And has ordered that Facebook pay $500 million in damages. This was a jury award. And yes, it's ZeniMax. And Facebook saying they're going to appeal the decision. Jury has rejected trade secret theft claims and ordered Oculus to pay $200 million for violating a non-disclosure agreement, $50 million for copyright infringement, and $50 million for improper use of ZeniMax's trademarks.
Sure, that's big and deep. I wonder if this happened before the buyout. I mean, this must have been, because if the technology
it was before built, it yeah, was so before the buyout. So Facebook isn't directly to blame for any of this, and Facebook is saying that they will. They will appeal the judgment. But jurors hitting Oculus co-founders Brendan Iribe, I'm not sure how you pronounce his surname, and Palmer Luckey, with not so lucky, I guess, with $150 million and $50 million in damages, respectively, for the trademark misuse. The jury found that John Carmack, who obviously joined Oculus, and he was, of course, the creator of blockbuster games like Doom and Quake, The jury found that Carmack took property belonging to ZeniMax, but they didn't order him to pay any specific damages. I'm just looking here at the statement from Oculus. Oculus spokeswoman Terry Randall said the heart of this case was about whether Oculus stole ZeniMax's trade secrets, and the jury found decisively in our favor. We're obviously disappointed by a few other aspects of today's verdict, but we are undeterred. Oculus products are built with Oculus technology. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg spent 5 hours in the dock, giving testimony, rather. I shouldn't say in the dock, because he wasn't being charged with anything. But he gave testimony for 5 hours in this case, and it's the first time he's been appeared in a court over anything of this sort of nature. And
he's no stranger to facing tough questions. That's been interesting.
Indeed, and of course, if you ever saw the movie, what was it called? The Social Network.
The Social Network, yeah.
He said it was heavily dramatized, but of course, the big focus of that was whether he stole someone else's
ideas to launch
Facebook. So he's our loser this week, Mark Zuckerberg. And our winner is a JSE-listed company called NetOne UEPS Technologies. Quite a mouthful. But we're picking them this week because, not because they've done anything right, but because they're simply going to win for the fact that they're going to have to continue to run South Africa's social welfare payments system after the government completely failed to come up with a solution of their own, knowing that the contract with NetOne was going to expire at the end of March this year. And now the minister and the the South African Social Security Agency, SASSA, are saying that they're going to go to the Constitutional Court and ask that the contract be extended, reportedly by a year, to NetOne, because the government simply isn't able to take over the project. Now, you have to wonder how we get into a situation like this. This is clearly one of the key projects in government. It's 17.2 million South Africans receive a social grant every single month. We won't get into the merits of that and whether it makes sense to be paying such a large number of people a social grant every month. But it's an indictment on the government that they've basically rested on their laurels, knowing that this deadline is coming, and are now going to go to the courts and ask that NetOne get the contract extended by a year. So by default, NetOne wins, because they're going to make a lot more money out of this project, and they're going to do so for another year at least. Of course, NetOne, a very controversial company. They've been accused of using the welfare payments to sell other services on top of it, and then deducting money from these accounts. A lot of people have argued that is unethical at the very least, and that they're preying on poor people. NetOne CEO Serge Bellamont has argued that they're simply providing services that people want. It's an interesting.
Everybody
debate.
Wants over the top services that spam your account.
They're a winner next week. NetOne UEPS Technology, simply because there looks like they're going to continue to run this contract pretty much indefinitely until the government can get itself sorted out and issue a new tender. The talk is that maybe the banks are going to take over the project.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Richard, what is your pick this week?
So I've been in a bit of a mobile gaming binge the last few weeks. So my pick is another game that I found. It's called Prune, and it is one of the most beautiful games that I've found. It's kind of very tranquil, and it's beautiful. I mean, you'll see it if you go to iOS. It's available on iTunes for 60 Rand. But it's essentially a game where you, it's going to sound funny, but you prune and cultivate trees. But it does so in a very, it's very beautiful and very tranquil, nice music.
Farmer van der Berg.
No, Farmer van der Berg, no. But this is based on, so you're basically cutting a cherry blossom. But I'm just going to show you now. So there's various stages, obviously, that you select. Once you've chosen your stage, some music will start playing. And your tree automatically grows. Now, this is it's very nicely designed. It's kind of an artistic style. This isn't based on any kind of photographic realism. I'm just waiting for it to start. Now you get various elements to the terrain that you are in. So you could be in a ditch or something. You've got sunlight, there's shade that you need to be careful of. But obviously, if I'm doing, I just swipe my finger across where I need to cut the tree. And every cut that I do obviously has an impact on the growth of the tree. If I cut it too short, it's going to die. If I cut the wrong branches, the tree won't grow. And the idea is to grow this massive cherry blossom tree. It's quite relaxing, to be honest with you, if you're sitting somewhere waiting in a doctor's room for a root canal, for example. This is the kind of type of game you'd want to be playing. And that's exactly how I found it. Yeah. I had the unpleasant... recently, but I've really enjoyed it. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, all the ins and outs of it, but it's one of those games that I'll come back to.
It looks nice and minimalistic, and
it is very minimalistic. Yeah, you're right.
It's very zen-like.
I'm very zen. I think that's a much better word to use. But there you can see my new trees growing, and obviously as it reaches the sunlight, if you have enough thick branches, it'll bloom nicely.
So how big does it get?
Well, I mean, it can grow as big as what you let it grow. But obviously, if you don't prune it, it's just going to grow up in straight lines. And there we go. Now I've just chopped some of the bushes. Now it's growing.
Okay. All right.
Handy.
Check it out if you feel like relaxing. And is it iOS Zen. Only or is it Android as well?
From what I could see, it was iOS only. I haven't seen it on any other platform. Okay. Oh, sorry, that is on Android.
Oh, there is on Android. Okay, yeah. Cool. We'll include the link in the show notes. For that app. My pick this week's been around for a bit, but it was acquired by Facebook recently. And that's an app called Masquerade, MSQRD. It's available for Android and iOS. There seems to be the only two platforms apps are available for these things, actually.
Is there any other platform?
No, not really. MSQRD, and it's pronounced Masquerade. And it's quite easy to see why Facebook bought it, because it's a competitor to Snapchat. The funny faces you can do in Snapchat, and it's good, quite fun. It's quite well implemented. I'm not a Snapchat user. I can't stand Snapchat. I think I'm too. I'm
not a millennial, Duncan.
I'm too old.
We've come to grips with our age. We're not the demographic.
But this one is quite fun, and it's quite good actually. So if you don't want to the complexity, or if you're old like me and can't figure out how to use Snapchat, then Masquerade is quite cool. If you want to play around and do some funny faces, I put one on. I put a beard on myself a bit earlier and scared the hell out of Rechard.
Yeah, I thought that was an impressive beard you grew.
It was very impressive.
Clearly not.
Especially since I grew it in the space of a morning. But it's quite a cool app. Lots of little, what do you call them, plugins? No, lots of little effects.
Stickers, the add-ons.
Add-ons that you can add to the app. And you can come up with some quite cool things. And then, of course, most importantly, you can share them to wherever you want to share them, to Facebook, to Twitter, to someone on email or WhatsApp, etc.
And it does face swapping, I see. That's quite handy.
It does, yeah. Quite a few cool ones in there. I like the beard one, though. It looks quite cool.
I'm downloading it now. I want to look like a panda bear. How's that?
So that's Masquerade, MSQRD, and it's in the Android and iOS stores. And that, apart from our quiz results, is the show. But let's get to that quiz quickly. Our first question this week was, government is seeking an extension to its welfare payment contract with NetOne UEPS Technologies, our winner of the week, as it is hopelessly unprepared to take over the payments itself. How many people depend on these welfare payments each month? And we were looking for the nearest million, and the answer is 17.2 million South Africans.
It's a lot of people on welfare.
It is.
Second question, MTN has increased its economic interest in which towers management group to 29%? The answer, IHS Group or the IHS Towers.
Our third question, what is the name of the fintech startup club in Sandton created by Rand Merchant Investments? And the clue we gave was we interviewed the club's head, Dominique Collett, in a Tech Central podcast this week. And the answer is Alpha Code. And it's pretty cool if you get a chance to check it out.
The fourth question, which opposition party MP said recently that South Africa's digital terrestrial television migration project has failed? And the answer, Marian Shin.
And our last question in the quiz this week, how many iPhones did Apple sell in its most recent fiscal quarter for the 3 months ended 31 December 2016? And we said we'd accept to the nearest 5 million. And the answer is 78.3 million iPhones sold in October, November, and December of 2016.
Mind-blowing.
It is. It's an amazing number, isn't it? It's an incredible number.
Well, that's a lot of iPhones.
It is. Anyway, the rumor is that the iPhone this year is going to be something quite special.
I believe so, yeah. I've seen some really interesting insider rumors from some really interesting people in Silicon Valley. And I think... Mm. I think they may get to the billion first. I might get a six pack of beer.
You might indeed. It's going to be, for me, it's the iPhone, what's it going to be called? The iPhone 10 is the rumor, or the iPhone X. Potentially, rather than the iPhone 7S, which it almost certainly is not going to be called.
Yeah, I really hope they move to some more creative naming. I mean, iPhone, just naming an iPhone, iPhone, you know, 7, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, it gets a bit boring. I think they need
Wouldn't
to introduce
iPhone
something.
X be cool, like they had with macOS 10 or iPhone 10, and then keep it as the iPhone 10 and then iterate from there, like they've done with the iPad. The iPad doesn't really have a name anymore.
Exactly.
It might work. They might be thinking of doing that.
I suspect it might be called the iPhone AR, Augmented Reality Edition.
If they do call it the iPhone 10 or X, I'm going to send them an invoice for my services.
Yeah.
That'll be $1 billion, please.
Yeah, we can afford it. Claim to that, yeah. We can upgrade the studio. How's that?
Yeah, $1 billion, we should be able to build quite a nice studio.
Yeah, exactly.
With that sort of
money. Yeah, I like it, yeah.
Good thinking. Are you listening, Tim Cook? Anyway, that's our show. As always, we love your feedback, so please drop us an email. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, take care. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.